Welcome to Marilyn Solutions with Reverend Marilyn, the speaker for the new millennium. Join Marilyn as she talks with guests offering a wide range of talents and information. And now, here's Marilyn.
So glad to have you here today on Marilyn Solutions. I'm glad you're joining us, and our guest today is Kevin Todeschi, author of many books, including Edgar Cayce on Soulmates, which is in its fifth printing and covers many facts of soulmate relationships and soul attraction, discussed by Edgar Cayce, and includes a discussion of contemporary relationship examples. His other book that we're talking about today is Soul Development, and it's his most recent book, Edgar Cayce's Approach for a New World. It details how each individual is constantly co-creating their unfolding life experiences. We will also discuss dreams and symbols today, so stay tuned. I want my listeners to be sure and tell the sponsors of this program that you heard about them on the air. They'll be pleased that you are listening and that you mentioned their spot that when their commercial times are coming up. I also want to let everybody know that I did deliver my Angel Art inspirational plaques, magnets, and my book to Crystal Voyage over at Freight House Square in Tacoma. If you're interested in a signed copy of my book, there are several over there. If you're also interested in receiving my videos, please tell Crystal so we can make them available for you. My videos of empowerment, and I have a video on spiritual tools for healing domestic violence available. Maybe you will find those extremely helpful in your life, and I found them from my experience, ways and tools that others might find help they're looking for. So check Crystal Voyage out and go over and let Crystal know that you know these items are there and you're interested in seeing them. I'm so glad to have Kevin here today. It's been just really fun talking with Kevin and getting ready for the show. He is a student and teacher of the Edgar Cayce material for more than 25 years and is the author of a dozen books. Busy guy, Kevin.
I try to stay busy.
An international spokesperson for Cayce's organization called the ARE. It stands for Association for Research and Enlightenment. He is also the author of several ARE Press bestsellers. One of them, Edgar Cayce on the Akashic Records, explores the primary source of Cayce's information, as well as how individuals frequently obtain insight from their past lives, their present experiences, and their unfolding futures. In addition, Kevin is a nationally recognized source on the interpretation of dreams and symbolism. His master's thesis, The Arc Myth, dealt with approaching the symbology and archetypal imagery of the great flood story from traditional, rabbinical, historical, psychological, and transpersonal perspectives. His definitive book on dream symbolism, The Encyclopedia of Symbolism, examines more than 2,500 dream images and symbols, and 10,000 interpretations. I've read that. Kevin has spoken to thousands of people on five continents. That's impressive. Helping individuals learn how they can gain practical and insightful information from their own dreams. His newest book on dream interpretation is called Dream Interpretation and More, Made Easy. And it discusses ways in individuals can learn to interpret dreams for themselves, as well as conscious dream play, the method of obtaining intuitive guidance from your imagination. He's a prolific writer and has authored many articles and publications, including an overview of Edgar Cayce material, the Edgar Cayce Ideals Workbook, Edgar Cayce's ESP, Edgar Cayce on Reincarnation of Famous People, Edgar Cayce on the Reincarnation of Biblical Characters, The Persian Legacy, and Edgar Cayce material in regards to video scripts, including the Edgar Cayce Legacy, which he did, which is the life and works of Edgar Cayce, which he also produced. One of his most popular books, 12 Lessons in Personal Spirituality, presents an overview of the Edgar Cayce material on personal growth and transformation. It's used by spiritual discussion groups throughout the country and received a highly recommended rating from the Library Journal and has been translated into Spanish and Romanian. A frequent guest on media programs, he has appeared on dozens of radio programs, including the Art Bell Show, often interpreting dreams on the air, which sadly we cannot do today due to our equipment being repaired. He has also appeared on news and cable programs, including the New Millennium, and is an instructor of dreams and meditation for the Casey Riley School of Massotherapy. In addition, he has led countless programs throughout the United States and spoken and led tours in France, Ecuador, Egypt, Israel, Greece, and Japan. He was also instrumental in helping to found and organize the Edgar Casey Center in Japan. A frequent lecturer on many subjects, including dreams and the nature of co-creation and ideals, the Akashic Records, personal relationships, and intuition, Kevin lives with his wife, Mary, in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Kevin, you have an impressive array of things that you've accomplished in your life.
Well, thanks, Marilyn. Thanks for having me on the show. I certainly like to stay busy.
Well, that's evident. And all you're like me. I always have many irons on the plate, everything going on at once. And I was very impressed. I actually finished reading your second book just before I got here this morning. But in reading your book about soulmates, I wanted everyone to hear on the radio today how really powerful that book is. I was very interested on Easter morning in completing that book, and I purposely finished reading it and found myself in tears because in reading that, I came to a tremendous understanding from what you had offered in your book that brought me to an honesty as far as healing a relationship with my half-sister.
And oh, that's wonderful.
I found out I had to be honest on my side of the street, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it not really wasn't the other person's situation. It was what was I being honest about and realizing in my case I had demanded things that weren't realistic. And in coming into that, I found a real healing on Easter morning. What a gift.
Well, that's a wonderful testimonial, Marilyn. One of the things I really like about that book is that it not only draws upon case histories from the Edgar Casey material, but throughout my travels I had collected over maybe 100 different stories of people, their own life stories, and wove those in with the Casey information. So it's got some contemporary examples that I think are very helpful.
Well, that's, I think, what makes the book so interesting, is that those stories are in there.
Mm-hmm. And some of them, like you say, are very moving. I was moved by some of the stories people told me as I was putting the book together.
Well, and basically what you were saying in many times in that book is that to heal our relationship is healing ourselves.
Absolutely. I think one of the hallmarks of the Casey information on relationships is the idea that ultimately, every person in our life that we have any kind of an emotional response to is a helpful character, even if it's somebody who pushes our buttons. And the help comes in the way that these individuals help us to grow and stretch ourselves in ways that we perhaps didn't even imagine. And then the positive relationships in our life, they really help us to get in touch with those strengths that are already a part of us and that we can work on and develop to a further extent. So Casey really has the idea that all people in our lives are there for a reason, and that reason is to help us learn more about our strengths and to help us heal our weaknesses.
Interesting. And the other thing I found so fascinating about that particular book was that it talked about some people who had a bed and breakfast. And it's interesting that I happen to have stayed there, and that's where I met your wife, and she gave me my first reading. And at that particular weekend, they were having an intuitive program that I was attending. In fact, they're going to have it again in April with Linda Hannah Schuller. And if I'll be in Mexico that particular week with John Van Auken. But if people are interested in finding out more about that intuitive program at that weekend program, they can contact me email through Marilyn@angelicasgifts.com. It was a wonderfully well worked out weekend of all kinds of training and understandings and metaphysical and psychic abilities, and it was a kind of a variety of things, but it was extremely interesting, and I think people would find it well worth their time.
Great, and they could also probably call the local region office, I think at 425-673-4314 if they wanted more information.
That's a good idea. Thanks for injecting that. I did want to ask you, if Edgar Casey, did he say that we all have a soulmate?
Well, actually, we all have more than one. So it's we've kind of been brought up culturally with the idea that a soulmate is a perfect relationship where I'm with this person, everything is blissful. So let me first say that that's not Casey's perspective of what a soulmate is. A soulmate is essentially a person with whom I have been together numerous times before, that we're drawn back together to pick up the relationship right where we left it off, and that the goal this time is to improve those things that need to be worked on and to continue to cultivate those positive qualities that are in our relationship. So with that in mind, any individual with whom we have a very strong emotional connection is a soulmate. And those individuals can be romance relationships, they can be parental relationships, relationships with children, relationships with close friends. A soulmate relationship is not necessarily a sexual relationship. It's instead a strong emotional connection with another human being that we carry with us through space and time. So from that perspective, everybody has many different soulmates.
Well, can they be negative, or are they always positive soulmates?
Well, we'd like to say that they're ultimately always positive. But the truth of the matter is, because we all have things that we need to work on, some of these soulmate relationships are extremely challenging. There's multiple examples, I think, in the book about people who had a very challenging relationship with a loved one, maybe it was a child, and through really trying to work it out, or a spouse, through really trying to work it out, they found where they really didn't expect to find one, a positive, fulfilling relationship. So I would like to think that all soulmate relationships have the potential to become very positive, helpful, hopeful, and a joy to be around in this lifetime, but they don't always start out that way.
Well, I want to encourage my listeners to stay tuned for the coming messages, and we will be returning with Kevin Todeschi and his books on Edgar Casey on soulmates and soul development, and later on, dream interpretation, so stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back to Maryland Solutions. We are talking today with Kevin Todeschi and talking about soulmates, soul development, and dreams. If you wish to reach me for counseling, intuitive readings, or Maze classes that will be starting up, please call me at 253-845-4907. Or if you wish to contribute to keeping this program on the air, you can call me at that same number, 253-845-4907, and help select a topic that you're still interested in hearing that we haven't identified yet, and you would like to hear more about that and talk about it on the air. We'd be glad to listen to your suggestions, and you can do that. You can also email me at Marilyn@angelicasgifts.com. And we're just so thrilled to Kevin to Todeschi, is that right, Kevin?
It's Todeschi, but Todeschi. You can just call me Kevin. That's
Kevin
fine.
is with us today, answering our questions. And what draws us to another person or causes that attraction that you might call a soulmate?
Well, I think that it's easier to see it in people that we really admire, that sometimes we meet someone or we see someone or we have an encounter with someone and we can't get them out of our head, or we just feel really positive about having been around that person. We spend a lot of time thinking about that person. Casey would say that in addition to whatever connection we have from the past or whatever our experiences with one another might have been, part of the attraction is that we're resonating to something inside of ourselves. The person is acting as a mirror. We're having an emotional response to something we see in them that is actually potentially a part of us. So part of the connection is we are seeing our own qualities reflected in another person, and we're drawn to them because by being with them, they can help us facilitate bringing those more to the forefront. So that's easy to see when people we really like and admire. The reverse sometimes is harder to see. Sometimes we meet somebody who really pushes our buttons, and we really, maybe they walk into the room after we've met them, and the hair stands up on the back of our neck, or we grit our teeth, or we feel uncomfortable by being around another person. Casey would say that the same thing is happening, that they're acting as a mirror, and we're seeing a part of ourselves that perhaps we haven't yet dealt with and we really need to address, and that the person is actually reflecting some of our own irritating behaviors or qualities that aren't so helpful. Now, sometimes I think, well, hopefully that thing I'm seeing in that other person is not as blatant or irritating in me as it is in that person. But Casey didn't say that. He just said that somehow all people in our life with whom we have an emotional connection, good or bad, are really showing us something about ourselves, and that's why we're drawn to them.
Well, yeah, I'm sure excuse me just a minute. I'm sure you've heard the words in Some Enchanted Evening, that song, and it says all of a sudden you look across the room and you see that special person and you know they're right for you. Is that the best motive for marriage?
Well, I wouldn't say yes. Sometimes marriages have worked that way and they've been very helpful, but it's also a way to get people together. Lots of times people have had the experience where they see someone and they feel instantly drawn to them, and then as soon as they get together dating or even after saying I do, some real challenges come to the forefront. It's definitely a soul memory, a soul connection, a soul longing that I need to be with this person for some reason. But unfortunately, we're brought up to believe that relationships are kind of like a fairy tale and we're all supposed to live happily ever after. And the truth of the matter is lots of times the people who we're closest to are the ones that are supposed to help us grow and change the most. And that's sometimes why relationships can seem to be challenging.
Well, why would a soul purposely choose a harmful or abusive family relationship?
Well, then we get into, there's a difference between someone who is very, very abusive or in a relationship that is physically harmful and someone who is just pretty irritating to be around. And then Casey did say, in fact, some people who are familiar with the Casey readings say, well, you know, Casey didn't recommend divorce, and that's not true. Casey suggested that divorce was certainly an option when one of three things were occurring. One was that the individual was in physical, mental, or spiritual harm's way and in danger by remaining with the person. The other was if one of the individuals had learned their lesson and could move on without any negative emotional response. And the third was if both individuals had learned their lessons and could move on. So just a normal, irritating relationship, Casey would advise there's something for us to learn in this. A relationship that's somehow harmful or abusive or dangerous, he would not recommend trying to stay in it. And lots of times people are in those relationships because their soul is trying to get them to stand up and say, you know, I don't have to take this anymore. I do have enough self-esteem that I can get myself out of this. And so really what the person is trying to learn is how to have self-esteem or appreciation in themselves, not trying to learn how to be a doormat by staying with someone who's abusive.
Well, that's exactly the lesson I had to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me quite a few years to be able to get strong enough to say, I deserve better.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a really terrific lesson. I needed to learn that.
And the length of time it takes us to learn these lessons is really up to our own choices and decisions. It's not that somehow the divine or the universe or God has it out for us and wants to see how long we can suffer. It's, you know, we're taking the curriculum at our own pace.
Right. And one of the things I found out is that we can delay it as long as possible and the pain continues.
Mm-hmm.
So I
stretch it out and take the long course.
And I choose now today to do it more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain the difference between twin soul relationships and soul mates?
I'll try. Part of it is a matter of terminology. So sometimes when Casey uses the word soulmate or twin souls or twin rays, that's not necessarily what other people mean by using those terms. So let me explain what Casey means.
All right.
Soulmates, briefly, we've talked upon, which is a strong emotional connection to another person that passes through space and time, and it's an ongoing connection we have with that person. That's a soulmate. A twin soul seems to be somebody with whom we have a deeper connection, somebody who is someone that helps us over and over and over again throughout our series of incarnations, somebody who, especially from Casey's perspective, is involved in helping us do a particular work. So there were examples in the Casey readings where a couple of souls would come back together again and again and again in order to achieve some kind of a work related to whether it was some kind of a spiritual work, some kind of a healing work, some kind of a work to help humankind. The two souls become twin souls because they choose at a soul level, since the dawn of time even, to have a purpose or an ideal to help others beyond themselves, and they keep getting drawn back together to do this work.
Mm.
Now, there are some people who would go a step further and say, well, you know, these souls, when they were first created, were one soul, and they kind of divided themselves into two different energies, and they keep coming back in order to come back together, and yes, they're doing the work, but originally they were one soul. Well, the danger in just having that as the interpretation is, although that may be partially true, is ultimately all of us are a part of God, and so ultimately all of us are, in a sense, twin souls with God, so all of us are connected in this way. So it's not like, there's many examples in the readings of twin souls who were parent and child, co-workers, two sisters even, two female sisters. So it's not this, we keep trying to get back to this idea somehow of there's one person out there for me and all I have to do is find them and mate with that person. That is not what a twin soul is either. A twin soul is someone with whom I share a work at a soul level.
Well, that's interesting. I like that idea. You mentioned in your chapter on loneliness some of what Casey told people to do. So often people will marry for loneliness, and he had some other options that he felt were viable and good information for those people to put under their belt, so to speak. What was the things that he suggested?
Well, actually, all the information on loneliness I found very fascinating because it seemed like to me that there were, just as we know today, and I've had experiences in my own life when I felt lonely, is that loneliness, from Casey's perspective, is a purposeful experience, not that we want to drag it out as long as we can, but it's happening for a reason. And one of the most common reasons, there were really two essential reasons, but one of the most common reasons was, for whatever reason, the individual had suppressed their soul talents, their soul abilities, their soul creativity, the thing they really wanted to do at a soul level, and they had for whatever reason said, no, I really can't do that, or I really shouldn't do that, or I'm not that good of a writer, or I could never speak in public. And even though the soul longing kept trying to come up, they kept suppressing it. That suppression, from Casey's perspective, creates loneliness, because you're really not having a relationship with who you really are as a soul, and it manifests as feeling lonely. That's one reason. And so what you really need to do is that you need to go ahead and try and reach out and try to do those creative things that you've wanted to do forever but just keep putting off because you don't think you can do them. The other approach to loneliness, as Casey said, very often in the past where for whatever reason we've cut ourselves off from another person or we've somehow separated ourselves from someone, maybe we had a monastic life or a life in a convent, and so that pattern of wanting to be alone is still there, that in this time it could manifest as loneliness. And in order to overcome that, we really need to reach out to other people. So if we find ourselves feeling lonely, what we might want to do is we might want to ask ourselves, you know, is there something I've always wanted to do but I keep telling myself I can't do? Or do I feel lonely because there's people in my life right now I'm supposed to be reaching out to and I'm not doing that? And Casey said once we start working on that issue, whether it's self-creativity or reaching out to others, we would draw to ourselves those relationships and people who needed to be a part of our life right now.
No, that's interesting. I'm finding all this information so fascinating. There's a lot of things I've just learned myself that were in the book and I really related to.
Well, the information on relationships I have found very helpful, and it's amazing because so much of it is not necessarily known by people today, and Casey really had helpful insights 60, 70, 80 years ago.
Well,
that can help us now.
Right, because what I really was finding out in what you read, and this is what my... I've come to this understanding through my own life, is that when I focus on Marilyn, I seem to do a lot better shape in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like what Pogo said in the comic strips, I have met the enemy and it is me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I kept hearing, was that so often we need to look at our own life and what do we need to work on to grow, and not so much what's going on other ways.
Right. And in my own life, after coming across this material over 20 years ago, I can say that I've gotten to the point now, if I have an encounter with someone where we disagree or we have some kind of an argument or there's hurt feelings, when I walk away, actually the first thing I ask myself, and it's almost even become subconscious now, is I ask myself, what is it I am supposed to be learning from this? Or why did this happen, and put it on myself, and then try to deal with the other person as soon as I've come to terms with what I'm really supposed to be learning.
Excellent question. We will be returning shortly after these messages with Kevin and talking more about soulmates and the soul development. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Solutions with Marilyn. We're so glad you're here today, and we are hearing some interesting information about soulmates and soul development today. And we are talking with Kevin Todeschi and just really finding out some new information that maybe you haven't heard before either. I like what I've read in his books. I think they're terrific. And I wanted to ask him, how can I find out more about this Edgar Cayce information?
Well, the two easiest ways would be to go to our website, which is www.edgarcayce, edgarcayce.org, and look up some information about Edgar Cayce. We also have many of our books on that website. Or to call our 800 number, 1-800-333-4499, and our customer service department would be happy to send out additional information.
Now, is that how they can get hold of your books, too?
They can get the books on our website, edgarcayce.org, or they can go to amazon.com and look up my last name or Edgar Cayce, and they'll be able to find the books there.
Terrific. I recommend them highly. I've been a student of Edgar Cayce now for quite a few years, and I keep finding more truths every day.
Well, like Mae St. Clair, who knew Mr. Cayce, used to say that there's so much of the information that we haven't even tapped yet, because it's so holistic. There's so much material there.
Exactly. Are there Edgar Cayce activities in this area?
There are Edgar Cayce activities in your area. We have study groups. We have conference programs. We have retreat a couple times a year. And there's a center, Edgar Cayce Center, there as well. The local number for that is, here it is, it's 425-673-4314. And the center is in Edmonds, but they have activities all over.
In fact, I'd like to add that Dr. Gladys McGarry, who has been on this show, will be at the CBEC retreat for the ARE this month, and it's a weekend, a wonderful experience. She's a lovely lady, and you can call that center and get registered if you are interested in attending and hearing more about Edgar Cayce things, too.
I've had the opportunity to be to CBEC a few times, and it's a wonderful retreat center, like you say. It's just marvelous.
I was even fortunate to be at CBEC for Easter today, or this week. I have a friend who's lived there most of her life, and that, to me, is a very spiritual place. I love going there.
It's got beautiful surroundings, and it's just wonderful.
So people would get a really nice treat and a little vacation.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Okay.
Did we want to talk a little bit about soul development and what Cayce said was some of the keys or tools for working with your own spiritual development?
Exactly. That's where I was heading right now. What would you like to say about that?
Well, I was just going to start by saying that, you know, regardless of our religious background or our belief system or what religion or lack thereof we were brought up with, I think the Cayce information on soul development makes it clear that any religious background can be helpful, and that the actual tools, the keys to spiritual development are not so much what religion I belong to, but how I apply and work with what information I understand and know. He gave three tools that I think are helpful for everyone regardless of their background, and those tools are to work with spiritual ideals, ideas and ideals that are somehow focusing on things I know I need to work on in my own life, spiritual attunement, learning how to work with prayer, meditation, things like that, and application. Actually, instead of just thinking about, you know, I really need to work on healing this relationship, or I'd like to really become better at working with my diet, to really start applying the things that we already know to do. And as we apply things step by step, we really move on to the next stage, and more is given, and we understand more about what we need to be working on.
The part I like about Edgar Cayce is he's always talking about applying it in your life.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And one of the things I saw in your book was a lady mentioned, I don't take things so seriously because I know that God has the master plan, so why sweat it?
Exactly. And sometimes it has been helpful for me, too, to understand that even if I don't know what the plan is, there is a plan, and that if I would just be open to being guided to do what I need to be doing, it will come to me at some point, and I'll be guided to where I need to be.
I also liked the question you had in your book, what if we were not really victims and our losses were not really punishments? Ultimately, what would happen if each of us became a better person for having the opportunity to encounter every experience that came to us in life? I think that I can relate highly with that. At one point in my life, I thought I was the all-time victim.
And it's so easy today to become a victim. I mean, if we look at what's popular on TV and how many lawsuits are filed in this country, I mean, people are really into blaming someone else for their problems and the things that are being drawn to them. And Casey would say that, you know, it's not necessarily because of another person, that there is a reason I myself drew this to me. When I was pulling together this book on soul development, just as a lark, I looked up lawsuits filed in this country, and I think in 1963 there were about 29,000 personal lawsuits filed in this country. 35 years later, that number was almost 300,000. And so we really have gotten into this idea that somehow somebody else is responsible for the things that are happening to me, and therefore I need to blame them. And that is not the approach in the Casey information.
I understand that today. You, in your book, you sounded like Groundhog Day, that movie if you're familiar with. Well, your comment was, what if this curriculum had to be repeated until it was learned?
Right, if we keep drawing to it. And I love that movie, Groundhog Day. If some of your listeners haven't seen that with Bill Murray, they really ought to, because the idea is that we keep having the same experiences over and over and over again until we not only know what the experience is, but that it becomes a part of our awareness. In Casey's perspective, there's a difference between knowledge, which is kind of thoughts, ideas, things we know in our head, and awareness, where it actually becomes a part of the soul makeup. And we actually, once that happens, we actually take it with us, so that no matter where we're born next or where we go as a soul, it's truly a part of who we are.
That's a major step in soul development.
I think so, and I think that, you know, one of the things that I have often told myself when I felt like I wasn't working as hard as I could on application was that one of the things that really transformed my life this time around was coming to a knowledge of how reincarnation works. Before that, I didn't think God was fair, and it really made a lasting impression on me. Well, if that knowledge doesn't lead me to live in a different way or deal with people in a different way or try to really apply what that means to me, the next time I come around, I may have to look for that information again. It will not be a part of my soul awareness unless I actually truly work and apply with what I know to do with it.
Well, I like what you said. Soul growth is the result of an individual positively meeting life's challenges. And that says to me we have to take those risks because we won't grow without them.
Right. And very often people who have tried different things that were challenging or they thought would be too hard to do, that at the end of it they said, you know, I'm really glad that I did that. And some other examples in the book that really touched my heart were when bad things happen to good people, for example, people who had lost a child, that somehow, even though that was a horrible tragedy, that the person really tried to make it into something that could to make a difference for someone else. And it ended up helping someone because of the tragedy they had been through. And therefore, it wasn't all a bad thing, that there some good had resulted out of that. And those kinds of stories, I think, are really, really applying soul development when it's challenging, hard.
I happened to sit next to a lady on an airplane coming back from being with my grandchildren, and this lady had exactly had a child die like you were just describing. And in sitting next to me was kind of a fluke. Of course, we call that now something different than a fluke. Synchronicity, I believe she was meant to be last on the plane and only the seat available was next to me. And in talking with her, I was able to do just what you were explaining, share with her how she could be helpful to other mothers in this similar situation. Mm-hmm. And she left the airplane so elated and so pleased, and she had not been able to get out of her depression and grief for quite a few years at that point. But she definitely changed.
Mm-hmm. And that's wonderful when you can do something like that for another person, because then they go out and touch two or three or four people, and they in turn touch some more people. And before you know it, we've transformed a large part of the world.
Exactly. One thing I'd like you to clarify for me, so often people talk about karma, but you claim that it isn't karmic debt between people, but rather it's a memory within oneself that has the possibility of being worked out by being with certain individuals. How are they different?
Well, lots of times Casey uses terminology that other people use as well, and Casey gives a different twist to that terminology. So sometimes in contemporary society, when you hear the word karma, or you hear someone say, that's my karma, it seems kind of like some kind of a debt or something that was unavoidable or something negative that the person has no choice in, and another person's been drawn into their life because there's no a way around it. Casey said that karma really isn't a debt, it's not an obligation, and it's not really even between people. Karma is only memory, a memory that we have perhaps in relationship to another person, but that memory is my own. And the way I often think about that is very often we might know of someone who we feel negative about. We don't really like that person, and for whatever reason we may have a negative memory about that person. Well, that individual may not have the same experience or the same feeling about me. I think we've all had relationships where there's or people in our lives that they want to be around us, or they want to talk to us, or they want to be our friend, and yet we don't quite feel as comfortable being their friend as they feel being our friend. And definitely there's something in there for us to work on. But the reason that happens is our karmic memory is ours alone, ours individually. And so what we need to do is we need to deal with our memory in relationship to someone without making them be responsible for it.
That's good to know. It takes the personality out of it, makes it more of a principle that you're working on.
And it's not the other person's fault. It's my own response to whatever came before. So it's my memory that I need to work on, that I need to heal. And whether or not the other person actually works on and heals their memory, you know, I'm not responsible for that. I can certainly help them if we're working together on something. But it's not my job to make sure another person learns their lesson. And actually, that's one of the challenges in working with soul development. If you have a spouse or a child or someone you're close to, very often we have a sense of what the other person is supposed to be working on, and we want to point it out when they don't quite live up to it or what they need to be doing. And that's really not my job. My job is really only to work on what I need to work on and not worry so much about whether or not the other person is learning their lessons.
All right. There's one quick question we're going to take before the break, and maybe you can tell us one of the most important facts in soul development. What would it look like in their lives?
I think one of the most important facts in soul development would be consistency of application. And whether we decide that, okay, I'm going to really try to do this in order to be a better person, I'm going to really start trying to meditate, I'm going to really try to start trying to heal this relationship, that consistency of application will actually move us to the next level. We just need to keep on keeping on.
Well, thank you. I want to remind my listeners that to sponsor this program, they can call the radio station, KLAY, 253-584-1480. Or for reaching me for counseling, intuitive readings, or classes that are coming up, please call me at 253-845-4907. Stay tuned for these messages, and we'll be back with Kevin shortly. Don't go away. Welcome back to Solutions with Marilyn. We are having the most entertaining, interesting speaking time, interview time with Kevin and his books, Edgar Casey on Soulmates and Soul Development. I want everybody to know that next week, Dr. Gregory Little, the author of The Mound Builders, will be with us. He has written a controversial book revealing America was settled at least 50,000 years ago. That's not what our history books told us. And also following that week, Frank Joseph has a fascinating book about Atlantis and Lemuria. And that program is ready for you to hear. And he talks about the Kennewick Man, which is a local city in eastern Washington, and tells more about that. So be sure and tune in and not miss some local information going along with Atlantis and Lemuria. Okay. We are just having such an interesting time with Kevin. I wanted to ask him, does everyone dream, Kevin?
Dreams are actually one of my favorite topics, and everyone dreams every night, an average of about 90 minutes. We don't dream 90 minutes all at once, but we have dream cycles, and if you added all of them up, they'd average out to about 90 minutes. But everyone dreams. Not everyone, however, remembers their dreams. We are not culturally predisposed to understand the importance of dreams or to want to work with them. But if we just started trying to write down our dreams upon awakening or try to re-experience the stories that have been on our mind when we open our eyes first thing, we would see that all of us are dreaming every night.
What are some of the ways we can learn from our dreams?
Well, I think one of the hallmarks, of the KC information is that when dreams were mostly being looked at only by psychologists and psychotherapists in therapy, KC was telling regular people, business people, housewives, husbands, students, how they could learn all about themselves, their relationships with one another, and even their futures and their future potentials by watching their dreams. And with that in mind, Casey said that most often dreams contrast and correlate the events of the day. They try to make sense of the things that we've been working on. They try to find clues into how we might work on a particular relationship. They try to give us insights into some of the things that are coming down the pike towards us. And they also provide us an upliftment or a healing, even if we don't pay attention to them. For example, very often we've had the experience where we go to bed depressed or we don't feel really happy, and we wake up the next morning and everything feels much better. And the reason is because the mind has tried to make sense of the events of the day, has come to some resolution, and we wake up feeling better because there has been a healing. Now, just imagine how much more helpful they would be if we actually remembered what took place and what the answer really is.
That's fascinating. How long have you been working with dreams?
I've been working with dreams for 27 years, and I spend a lot of time helping people interpret their dreams or teaching dream interpretation. I have an ongoing dream interpretation class here in Virginia Beach, and just giving people insights in how they can deal with dreams. I also do a lot of speaking in local high schools about dreams and how individuals can work with them.
Well, that's great, because people are usually very interested in their dreams. I, at first, did keep a tablet by the bed, but I've trained myself to remember them pretty well now. It's kind of like you have to practice that.
Yep. And, you know, lots of times people say they don't work with their dreams because they don't know how to interpret them.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth of the matter is, once you get started, you can see how easy it really is. I often tell my dream classes that the goal is not to try to memorize a bunch of symbols. You can get a dream dictionary for that, or you can get an abridged dictionary, which is very helpful in terms of figuring out what word metaphors mean. Like a fish, one of the metaphors might be something smells fishy. But once you start working with them, just by looking at themes, like what's happening in the dream, the action in the dream, or feelings, how did I feel when I first woke up? How did the dream make me feel? That both those things can be very helpful in analyzing a dream, even if we don't at first know exactly what it's all about.
Yeah, I found that the more I worked with my dreams, the easier it was to understand them.
Absolutely. And ultimately, believe it or not, we're all our own best dream interpreter, because we have a sense of what different symbols mean to us. We know what my mother or my father means. We know what my experience at work means. We know how I feel about different people in my life. And all those personal symbols have meaning to me that somebody else will not be familiar with.
Well, it does sometimes help to have a group. In my search for study group, sometimes we will bring a dream and people will help put some input into it. And all of a sudden, I saw something from a different perception than I had been looking at it, and it was really what I needed to hear.
Absolutely. In fact, when I teach dream interpretation on the road, I often encourage people to do it in a group, and we get in group for exercises, because when people go around and hear other people talking and they start to brainstorm themselves what something might mean, they get excited about how easy it really is.
Right. What does it mean if you dream about someone who has deceased?
Well, a couple of things. Casey said it's possible when we dream about someone who's deceased to actually have a real communication with that person, so that when my own grandfather died, I remembered that I had a dream where he was in the living room and kind of called to me, and I walked over, and he sat down by me and just said he enjoyed being my grandfather, he was okay, and everything was fine and not to worry. I think real communication was taking place in that example. We also have dreams where people symbolize something. Let me give you an example about work. Lots of times I'll dream about an old job, and it doesn't necessarily have to do about the old job. It has to do with something symbolic of work. So if I dream about someone who is deceased, a parental figure or even an old spouse or someone, it could have to do with someone right now who reminds me of that person, or someone else that person is symbolic of, and they actually represent that other individual.
Well, one of the books Rob Grant, a mutual friend of ours, suggested I read was The Boy Who Saw True.
That's an excellent book, uh-huh.
And I had some fascinating experiences after that, and I recommend that book highly also.
He had some encounters with people who were deceased, and I think the same thing happens in our dream state. We just don't watch our dreams, and so we don't know that someone who has just died is trying to reassure us that they're okay.
Well, in my experience, my aunt and my mother and some other people have come back to give me information that I didn't have prior.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding out how practical it really can be.
Absolutely. I'll tell you a quick example. I had a woman call here once. Her daughter had been killed, a four-year-old daughter. It was a tragedy. She'd been run over. And she had called us because her minister had suggested it. And she was really devastated because she didn't have much belief in an afterlife. She was an agnostic. And I asked her just to write out the question. I think her daughter's name was Stacy. How's Stacy doing? And to think about Stacy before she went to bed to see if she could have a dream. And that night she had a dream about Stacy. She went out to the cemetery there where her daughter's gravesite is and saw Stacy sitting on the grave with a birthday cake in front of her. And she looked up at her mommy and smiled and said, "Don't worry, mommy. I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay." And that was the end of the dream. And the woman called me and she said, "Well, she's not okay. She's dead." And I said, "Well, she's very much alive. She's just not physical."
Yes.
And so she was trying to reassure you that she really is still Stacy. She's just not in a physical body.
That's the most heartwarming part of what I do when I help people talk to those passed over, is to reassure them that it is not necessarily what the movies or necessarily we've been taught in society happens, but it's really a very positive experience generally.
Absolutely.
You mentioned some symbol understanding for fish. What would you say to people that might have automobiles or cars in their dreams?
Well, and there are other symbols for fish, like fish also oftentimes has to do with spirituality, just so people don't think that if they dream about a fish, something's fishy. Generally, a fish will symbolize something related to spirituality. An automobile, as a common symbol, very often that will symbolize either a physical body, my personal physical body, my life's direction, or literally my car. So that if I dreamed that I was going down a hill and my brakes were out of control and I kept pushing on the brakes and nothing happens, that from a little literal perspective, it could be suggesting that I'm really having brake trouble and I need to check my car, literally, or it could be suggesting that my life is out of control and I need to figure out how I can slow down in life, otherwise I'm going to end up with a problem.
Great, that's a helpful thing to know. What about if you had flying in a dream?
Lots of time a flying dream is suggestive of that everything is great. We feel really control of a particular situation. Our soul is trying to buoy us up because it's a really good time. Or sometimes when we're really having a difficult time, we can have a flying dream in order just to buoy us up and make us reassure us that everything's okay. Conversely, a falling dream happens when something feels out of control, that there's something going on that we don't know what to do about, that we're worried about something. We can have a falling dream in that sense.
Oh, that's interesting. What happens if this happened to me several times, you dream that you're naked in public.
Naked in public has many different possibilities, but it could suggest mostly that somehow I'm being exposed or vulnerable to people around me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a young person who is very proud of their physique and they have a dream about being naked in public, that could be an example of showing off, that somehow I'm dreaming about showing off.
Interesting.
So well, it depends a lot on the person.
Do people dream in colors or black and white?
Well, lots of times people will say to me, you know, I never dreamed in color, or I always only remember my dreams in black and white. I think that potentially all of us can dream in color. I think in my experience with dreams is those people who are very left brain and see everything black or right or wrong, there's only one way to do things, those are the people who are more apt to dream in black and white. Whereas someone who's more creative and more open and more easygoing, they're more apt to dream in color. But most people I talk to dream in color.
Well, this hour has just fled. I just got my cue. We're going to have to say goodbye, Kevin. I want to thank you so much for being here. And would you quickly tell them how to get hold of Casey's information?
They can call our 800 number at 1-800-800-800. 833-4499 or look us up on the web at www.edgarcasey.org. Marilyn, thanks for having me on the show.
You've been a terrific guest, and I want everyone to stay tuned next Wednesday for Solutions with Marilyn, and have a great day. It's sunny and gorgeous, so go enjoy. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Marilyn Solutions. Listen again next week for another informative show with guests from coast to coast. For a copy of today's program or a copy of her new book, Roses Have Thorns, and videotapes on empowerment and spiritual tools for healing domestic violence, write to KLAY in care of Marilyn Solutions, 10025 Lakewood Drive Southwest, Tacoma, Washington, 98499. Or visit her website at Marilyn@angelicasgifts.com.
Many people are looking for a new direction and a lift in spirit. Hello, I'm Reverend Marilyn, a counselor, teacher for over 30 years, and a spiritual advisor for addictions, codependency, domestic violence, past lives, and holistic healing. Join me every Wednesday at noon for Marilyn Solutions, a program sure to be of interest to everyone. We will talk with guests from coast to coast, offering a wide range of talents and information. That's Marilyn Solutions, Wednesdays at noon on your news and information station, KLAY 1180.